Hey, it's Jeff and Jeremy from the Ultra Running Guys. And if you're here, you probably already know that we started this podcast to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey.
But what you may not know is that in addition to this podcast, we also host two live races in the Wilmington, North Carolina area that are designed to do the same.
Yep, the first is the Hydra, which takes place on April 20th and has a 50K individual, a 50K relay, and a half marathon option. Whatever option you choose, we promise that slaying the Hydra will be unlike any race that you've ever experienced.
And the second is the Final Countdown, which takes place on September 14th. And whether you've never run before or you're a hardcore ultra veteran, this race is designed to help you find your limits. And we will be there with you to help celebrate.
All right, so mark your calendars, share with your friends, and visit us at our website, theultrarunningguys.com, or check out the links in the show notes for more info.
And with that, enjoy the episode, and remember, when in doubt, just show up.
I felt like a failure. I really did. I felt like I had failed the training plan. I felt like I had failed my family for dragging them up to Raleigh. My brother drove up there to help me out. So at that point, I could have just said, you know what? I'm not doing another 100. These things are, maybe it's outside of my capability. You know, that same feeling I had back before I did the marathon. But that's what I really got out of that first failure, was that you only fail when you quit. So if I don't give the 100 another shot, then I will have failed.
And welcome back to the Ultra Running Guys. You got Jeremy Reynolds and Jeff Winchester of the Ultra Running Guys. And the reason that we're here is to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey. If this is your first time, we're so happy to have you. Thank you for coming by. If you find value in this, please share with your friends. Give us the rating. Give us the review. All the good stuff that we normally ask for. And if you're coming back, your family, we love you. We appreciate you. Let's get right into it. All right. So our guest tonight has quickly become a good friend of ours and has earned our respect for his unwavering work ethic as well as his mental toughness, both of which we've witnessed on and off the course. His story is that of a guy who previously thought that running simply wasn't for him because he couldn't seem to do so without getting injured. But after being inspired by the David Goggins book, Can't Hurt Me, in 2021, he jumped in head first. And after a roller coaster of triumphs and challenges, he was able to conquer one of the toughest 100 milers on the East Coast in 2023 and is now gearing up for the 2024 Southern Tour Last Man Standing. So stick around to hear what he's learned and how he stacks the odds in his favor, including the method that he used to reduce his aerobic running pace by over 4 minutes per mile.
That's legit, man.
It's pretty ridiculous. And with that, Ed Kennedy, welcome to the show, man.
Man, thank you. I appreciate that. It felt weird hearing that, really.
Well, look,
but I appreciate it.
Dude, we got a chance personally to meet a couple years ago on the Last Man course. And so us as a group, we've been able to kind of watch some of the arc. And I think arc is the term that we use when we talked about you, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of your journey so far. So we've got lots that we want to talk to you about. A couple of things that I mentioned in the intro. But let's start by kind of going back to the beginning of the running journey. So 2021, as I said in the intro, you were injured, you were having some troubles, then you read the David Goggins book, you sign up for a marathon. Take us to that. Like, what happened there? Why'd you do that?
Well, so I had this marathon planned, I think, for probably like 4 or 5 years. You know, I write it down in my journal every year, I write a list of goals, and it was always one of my goals. And, you know, it was always probably the first one that got crossed out that I did not do. So I had actually tried running longer a few times. And by longer, I mean like 3 to 4, maybe 5 miles at a time. And by the end of the run, my IT band would always flare up on me. And the next day I'd be hobbling around. So I had just assumed at that point that you had to be built a certain way to be a runner. It was just in my mind that, okay, running is just not going to be one of those things that I do. So fast forward, I guess, to reading Can't Hurt Me by Goggins. I don't think I had ever even heard of a 50 miler or a 100 miler at the time. I had heard about a full Ironman triathlon, and I kind of had always wanted to do one of those, but I figured, well, if I want to do a full Ironman, I have to be able to do a marathon first. So fast forward to reading that book, for anybody that has read that book, it kind of makes you realize that your potential is definitely unlimited. But if people are running 240-mile races, then why can't a 30-year-old person who thinks that they're in shape run a marathon? So that was kind of the idea of just really signing up for the race. Now, I will tell you, I was at the firehouse when I finished reading the last page of the book, and I happened to walk into the gym, and all the guys on shift were working out, and I said, hey, who in here would like to run a marathon with me? And none of us were long-distance runners by any means. We're pretty much, you know, guys that lifted weights and did some, you know, VO2 max type of stuff. So pretty much everybody shut me down except for one guy. So I definitely owe it to him. And he just looked at me and said, yeah, why not? So we immediately signed up. And then when we signed up, he saw that the race was 3 weeks from that date.
Can't hurt me, man.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. So the longest run that I had run that year was 7 miles. And
prior to the race or prior to signing up
in his life,
in my life.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out if 7 miles is what you towed the line on or with, or prior to saying I'm going to run a marathon.
Yeah. So prior to signing up for the marathon, my farthest run was a 7 miler. And so was his, it was with him. And during lifeguard training, we run 1/2 mile sprints at a time. So throughout the year of 2019, I guess it was, or 2020, I probably stacked up about, I'd say, 20 miles total of actual run training before we signed up. So once we signed up for the marathon, we looked at each other like, we need to get our butts in gear because we've got 3 weeks to nail this thing.
You know, that's a good training strategy, by the way. Just 3 weeks is plenty of time.
If you're listening, take notes. I wouldn't even do anything until 3 weeks before.
Of course, most people will actually start tapering 3 weeks out for the race, but that's irrelevant.
Just keep going. And before you keep going, or before you go, I want, for people that don't know you, so you mentioned a couple things. You said at the firehouse, so you're a fire chief.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you
sir.
Mentioned, you know, the weight training. You also mentioned being a lifeguard. Dude, okay, so if you're listening, I want you to picture Ed's the guy that when we're like, hey, because you ran our races. Yeah, Ed's the one that was jacked. Did you see the jacked guy that ran by, you know, and everybody's like, oh, yeah, that guy. Mm-hmm. So you kind of fit the mold of firefighter, weightlifter, lifeguard. And so as soon as you said, because people listening may not have picked up on when you said, oh, I guess you have to be built a certain way, right? For a guy that carries around a lot of muscle, I could see why somebody maybe think that you look more like a CrossFitter than a cross country runner. So I just want to kind of set that tone for everybody listening. Like, you're an in shape guy, but I could see why from a running perspective, you may have said, hey, I'm not sure I fit the mold here.
The caveat though, is that at the race, when you said that guy who was jacked, people did get confused between him and me.
That's true. They're like, Jeff? I was like, no, the other Jack. Oh, like, oh, right, okay. Right. That guy.
Ed, why are you laughing?
Because I agree with you.
Thank you. It's easy to see.
So proceed. Okay, so we're 3 weeks away. You've run 7 miles.
You're getting on the line.
Take us to the marathon.
Yeah.
Yeah, so our next step, the next day we went to Fleet Feet and got stepped on the scale and fitted for a pair of shoes, which was probably one of the best things that I have done since starting running, by the way. I think a lot of my IT band issues were just from, you know, I'd go run in boots or just really crappy shoes that I'd had laying around, which probably wasn't good for my IT band. So we got a pair of shoes, and the next day we went out and did a 10 miler. And that was not good. I had a lot of trouble walking for the rest of the week after that. So at that point I was a little scared, but I still had about 2 weeks to put some work in, I guess you could say. So a week later, when, you know, the pain started easing up a little bit, we did another 10 miler together, and it wasn't fast. I think it was like, we thought we were running fast, but it was probably like 11 to 12 minute per mile pace in the woods. So after that, we couldn't walk again for like a week. And then we ended up doing one more 10 miler. And then we just show up to the race. So we get to the race. It was like 36, 37 degrees and pouring down rain. So we're looking at each other like, what are we doing here, man? We're not runners. You know, what's going to happen? So we end up going to the gas station, buying some stuff, and then taking the grocery bags and duct taping them over top of our shoes because it was raining so hard. But anyways, you know, we got to like mile 9 and started cramping up pretty bad. My right leg cramped up really bad at like mile 9, mile 10, to where I was starting to question like, you know, 26 miles is a long way. And then I got to about mile 15 and my other leg locked up. So now I'm basically what I feel like running on peg legs. This is the first part where I realize I don't know if I can physically make it another 9 miles. And we're starting to get passed by 75-year-old people. I mean, we were getting smoked at this point. And, you know, looking back, this is probably my first experience with the way that you feel at like mile 80 in a 100-mile race. I mean, it was one of those periods of time that I thought that I was in shape. And now I'm at mile 18 in the rain, wondering if I'm actually going to make it out of there or if I'm going to have to crawl out of there. But anyways, we get to the end. Funny story, though, we ran every single step for step until the last quarter mile. He looked at me, he said, "You don't look so good. Do you mind if I go ahead and take off?" Yeah, that was the last time he ever ran, but still to this day, he holds a faster marathon time than I do.
You know why I love that story so much is because we know you now and we know the work ethic, we know the work that you put in. And so to look back, and it's interesting, of course, can't hurt me. I've read the book and we've talked about it before that even though Goggins is obviously his whole thing is about always being prepared, right? But I think it inspired a lot of people to probably jump outside of their current limit or, you know, readiness maybe is a better way to put it and take on something that they probably weren't ready for. And it sounds like that was a similar experience. So it's funny to hear, but what would you say today, if you could go back to that Ed, what advice would you have for the Ed that was showing up for that marathon?
Do it again, do it the exact same way. You know, you hear a lot that you should always train for a marathon before you do it. And I certainly don't recommend every person go out and just run a marathon because you could get injured and it could be a long lasting injury, but I learned so much during that marathon. I had been placed in a mental position that I had never been in my entire life at like mile 15 too. And that was, I think that was probably about the halfway point for that race. So I had a long time in the rain and cold to really think about, like, I had sold those shoes on Craigslist in my mind about 100 times in the last 9 miles. And I swore I'd never run again. I really did, you know? And it was probably the next day or the day after that, Noelle, my wife, she said, just imagine, you know, if you trained for one like that, you could probably do pretty good. So then it got the wheel spinning like, I wonder if I actually did train for one of these, how would I do? And just so you know, I think my time, I should have looked it up, but I think it was close to 6 hours. It was like 5:45 or 5:55, something like that. So we finished close to last.
But he still didn't give up on running.
Right. So you decide, hey, I want to see what I can do with this thing. And I'm going to fast forward us a little bit. But because we know the story, I think kind of your next big thing ended up being an ultra distance. But how did you get there? Because you just mentioned, you know, did a marathon, got wrecked. And earlier in the story, you actually mentioned Ironman. So tell us kind of how you end up at Southern Tour.
So fast forward a couple months. Well, actually, right after the marathon, I started looking at, okay, what's next? And by running that 26 miles, I sort of gave myself a level of confidence that I didn't have before, which was good. So I signed up for a half Ironman. It was the White Lake half. So swim 1.2, bike 56, and then run a half. So I kind of willy-nilly put together some training, started running a little bit. Really started doing, I guess they call them brick workouts, where you bike a little bit and you run right afterwards. That actually was kind of the reason I discovered that I just like running as opposed to biking then running, because, you know, you run right after a bike and your legs are, they're dead. So I did the White Lake half and I did okay. I finished middle of the pack. I think it was like 6 hours. I was kind of seeing that if I put the work into something that I think is hard, then, you know, obviously the rewards are related. So I did the half. As soon as I got done with that, I started looking for a full. So I felt like, okay, I did the marathon, so I can run the distance. I just did the half. Now let me try a full. So I started looking around. I think at the time, pretty much all of them were booked. And they're very expensive too. And it was at the time where, you know, the training, for example, to go out in the morning and bike, if it was rainy, you know, the bike lane might be full of mud puddles. So, you know, it's just kind of hard to really get into bike training. So I discovered that I just didn't like biking that much. You know, the clothes, the pants, you know, the shorts that you got to wear, you know, the helmet. I just didn't like it as much as just throwing on a pair of running shoes and getting out the door. So, yeah, at that point, I started searching around, like, what is the equivalent of difficulty to a full Ironman? And a lot of people said that, you know, it being roughly 12 hours, a 50-mile run is about the equivalent of a half or a full. I'm sorry. So I haven't done a full, so I don't know if that's the equivalent, but that's just what people were saying. So I started looking for 50s. And then I come across Olmsted 100. And to be honest with you, I researched, because I found out about 100s, what is the easiest 100 on the East Coast? And I don't know if Olmsted is the easiest, but I guess it's claimed to be one of the easier ones to help people get by. Then I saw that in order to get into Olmsted 100, you have to have a qualifying 50. So I was kind of putting the cart way ahead of the horse again. So I found the Southern Tour Ultra 50 mile. So I ended up getting into Olmsted because they've got a caveat that says, we trust that you will have meet a qualifying race by the time race comes. So you guys know Olmsted, the lottery process. So you're sitting there hitting the space bar, and I actually got in on the very last drawing part. I think there's like 10 slots. So at that point I'm like, man, I really got to train for this 50 now. Cause I've got a 100 in April. So that's kind of what led me to the distance.
There's two things. One, you talked about when you finish that marathon, the confidence build, right? And I think a lot of times we take it for granted. But like you said, you came up to, and I think it's what a lot of us get out of ultras, is when you do something that you're like, oh my gosh, how did I end up here? And then you go finish it. It can be, for some people, it can be a real hit to the ego. But for oftentimes, if you push through it, and it made me think of Jameson when he talked about self-trust versus self-doubt. And so just when you said, I was like, oh, okay. So that was kind of a pivotal point for you, right? Of like, okay, I could do hard things. What else can I do here? And then you mentioned Olmsted. For everybody listening, we did a race spotlight on that. I would agree, and we both run it, that while it may not be the pound for pound, the easiest course on the East Coast, I would say it's fairly easy and they have incredible support. Like, I think it's a great first time 100 miler. So it seems like that was a good pick.
Yeah, I mean, there are other ones that are even, it depends on how you define easy.
Right.
So there's one that's completely flat, like Blackbeard's Revenge is on the East Coast, and that's a flat 100 miler as well. Just depends on what easy means. To me, Olmsted is brutal, but that's because I'm weak.
I found out twice it was
brutal. Yeah, you did. So that's right.
That Google search was wrong.
That's awesome.
Okay, so take us though, because this is how you and I end up crossing paths for the first time, right? So you sign up for the Southern Tour 50 miler. Mother Nature has different plans for you though. So I just want to know though, as you're getting close to it, how was training going? How are you feeling as you're facing down your first 50 miler?
At this point, I figured I really need to get on a training plan. I started looking up, do I need a coach or do I not need a coach? And I had figured that if I could, you know, willy-nilly get through a half Ironman, that I was going to at least try my own plan out with my first 50. So I was doing a ton of research. I mean, reading just about everything I could on basically how to properly train. And I kept coming across Maffetone heart rate training. And it's important to know that before I found out about Maffetone, every single training that I did was as hard as I could. I mean, if it said 4 miles, that was as fast as I could run 4 miles. So, you know, I started off fast and then my last mile was the slowest. So I actually found a video by Floris Gehrman. I don't know if you guys have heard of Floris or not, but he had a guy on there that started doing Maffetone training. He was able to bring his 1 mile time at heart rate from 11 minutes to 6 minutes in, like, I think it was like 3 or 4 months. And to me, it opened my eyes that maybe I was training wrong. So for those that don't know, you guys have both done Maffetone training, right?
I have.
I do not.
Yep. Okay, so essentially, you could probably get really deep into the weeds, but I made it extremely simple. It was 180 beats per minute minus your age. And what you do is you essentially try to run all of your runs below that heart rate. So what I did, I was 33 at the time. I would try to keep all of my runs below 147 beats per minute. And as soon as you bust that, you got to stop running and start walking. So I would do that until my heart rate got down to about 137. And then once my heart rate got down to 137, I'd pick back up running again. So I came across Maffetone, started doing that, and I actually tried a Maffetone test. So what you do is you do a 5-mile run, you do a 1-mile warm up, and then you essentially measure the next 4 miles. So you try to stay as close as you can to 147 heart rate or whatever your heart rate is. And then whatever that mile time is, you record that. And then after you've got your 4 miles, you average those out. So you figure out, okay, this is what your average, and it's essentially your aerobic capacity at that time. So I'll start this off by saying at that time I could run a single mile in about 6:15 to 6:30 pace. So I thought I was fairly fast, but I couldn't go long distance. So I knew I was missing out on something, and it just made sense to me. So I've recorded every single month since I've started, which has been important for me because when you see the progress, it really motivates you to keep up with the work too. So my first math test, my average 4-mile time was 12:01. And for me, it was very humbling because I was out there running and, you know, I'd bust the heart rate and have to start walking again. Mm. I'd start running, bust the heart rate and have to start walking again. So anyways, I did that for a few months, started seeing some real progress. I think it took me about 3 months in order to be able to do a 4-mile math test without having to stop running. So finally, I got to about 3 months in, and I could finally run all 4 miles without having to stop with busting that heart rate. So that also allowed me to really progress and build because it slowed my pace down quite a bit to where the IT band stuff, that was gone. It was out the window because I was running a lot easier. So it really allowed me to stack on some miles. So I found a free 100-mile training plan. I think it was Relentless Forward Commotion or something like that. It's online. You can print it off. They got a 24 and 28-week plan. But I only missed, I think it was 4 or 5 actual runs within that 28 weeks too. So I was very disciplined in the runs. And I just carried that out all the way up until the race.
Yeah, so to me, math was one of the kind of biggest catalysts for me in building endurance. So I had a very similar experience, did research. And so for everybody listening, we'll get a little bit into the weeds, not too much, but math is, so Dr. Phil Maffetone is kind of the guy that created it. And I guess I would probably do the same thing, right? He came up with MAF, which is an acronym, and I forget, it's max aerobic factor or something like that, but fits right with his name, MAF, easy to remember. And so really the whole idea, and so here's the thing, is there you'll find people that are very pro MAF. Other people say, oh, it's, you know, I don't want to do that thing. But one of the common themes that you see around running anyways is easy running, mm-hmm. right? Whether you say, hey, conversational pace, 80-20, do 80% of your stuff, you know, easy. And it really comes down to, a lot of people will hear this and they'll say, I don't understand. And you'll see run slow to get faster. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly what you're talking about. And kind of the, you know, the science behind it, right, says that, hey, to build that aerobic zone, it's really a fat burning zone. It's a lower heart rate zone. And that's where kind of our endurance peak is going to be. Obviously, the higher our heart rate gets, the more sugar we're building, the more we build up. I don't know if it's lactic acid or lactate, what the right term is, but you know, you're doing different processes in your muscles. You're using less oxygen, those types of things. And for most of us, we skip right over that aerobic zone. I was doing the same thing, right? I was running lots of miles. I could go run what I felt is an easy 8-minute mile. And as soon as I started math, it was like 10:30. And it was like, oh, okay. To keep my heart rate down where it needs to be, I really need to slow down. Not a very similar experience. And I brought that from about 10:30 to up to, you know, over time to about 7:30. So everybody listening, you go, well, what's the benefit? The benefit is that now your pace is increasing at the same intensity. And when you can increase pace at the same intensity, it really increases that efficiency. And so it's cool to hear you talk about, and I've seen your logs, dude, it's impressive. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that you kept track or have continued to keep track of all that, it's so cool to see actually written out. Cause you hand, do you still handwrite it to this day or do you?
Yeah, pretty much every month, unless I have an injury or a race. And I don't do the month after a race either, just because, you know, you're feeling like crap really. But yeah, every single month now for the last couple of years, it's motivating too, when you see the progress. Now I'll say this, it also allows you when you have a setback. So there's been, I think, 3 months that I have, my math time has gotten worse than the month before. It really allows you to take a look back and say, okay, what am I doing to not continue this process? You know, you're not getting enough sleep. Are you not eating well? You know, do you have stressors in your life? Are you not running well? You know, are you stacking up too much volume? So it's just, for me, it was, because I was so new to running, it was an objective measure that I could use against to just go out and run, because I was so curious, how fast are you supposed to do these runs? You know, you get a big plan. It's like, okay, is it as fast as you want? Is it slow? So the heart rate really allowed me to stay consistent, because it's an objective measure that you can go up against. Now, I'll be honest, I don't know if I've been able to bring my runs from a 147 heart rate from a 12-minute mile to a 740 mile because of the math, or if it's just because of the consistent training load that I've had the last couple of years. But I will say that the math, heart rate, and run training has allowed me to stay consistent. So I relate those two together anyway. So I don't know if it's the magic bullet, but it's definitely helped me.
Just a couple of questions, or maybe one, just depends on where we go. Are all of your runs math?
I'd say 99% of them. Every once in a while, I saw my brother, Ryan, you guys know Ryan, he posted something the other day. I think his pace was like 7:11. He said, sometimes you just got to let your hair down. So some of my runs are just like that, where, you know, you just want to go out and feel free and, you know, give it your all. If I'm training for something specific, so like when I was training for the URI 100, I was doing a lot of treadmill elevation, you know, uphill and downhill. So I didn't worry about math a ton during that. But unless I'm going for a PR or specifically training for something, pretty much every single run is 147 heart rate or lower.
So, and I'm not a math expert or anything. I know a little bit about it to be dangerous, but it's my understanding that one of the ways, the strategies that they recommend in the Maffetone method to decrease your pace or to get faster, if you will, is that you do want a small portion of your runs to be higher intensity in order to lower that pace. Is that correct?
No. So yeah, I think that's where you hear a lot about the 80-20. So, you know, if you're running 5 days a week, 20% of that would be one of your days is a speed day. So there was a period of time where I was trying to increase my mile time or increase my 5K time, where once a week I was doing some speed type workouts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it might be like a 5 miler with 3 minute intervals or something like that. But for the most part, for me, I actually saw a reduction in my 1 mile time with just doing math, which was pretty crazy to me. So I actually reduced my 1 mile time from 6:31 down to 5:27 with all Maffetone training.
Yeah. You also do other types of workouts as well. Are those all low heart rate? Are you doing any high intensity workouts?
No, I think most of my like weightlifting now is probably 90% high intensity. So like CrossFit style workouts. Every once in a while, you know, maybe once a week, I'll do just a normal strength training workout. So I'll go in there and bench press and do squats and deadlifts and that sort of thing. But most of my workouts will be high intensity intervals where you're rotating through certain sets. But yeah, mostly high intensity on the weightlifting side.
So I will say, from at least this a couple years ago, right? I haven't dug into math. So if there's new data out, or if anybody's listening that is into that and has been, you know, following Phil Maffetone and what he's putting out, but kind of the way it used to be was the recommendation was when you're first starting, because it's really about building that aerobic base, right? And so his recommendation was really for like 2 to 3 months, like a solid block of like math heart rate only, to the point where he was even like, hey, avoid weightlifting if it takes you over, you know, and that was just some of the guidance that came out of it. But then to your point, I think it was like, okay, as we develop that aerobic zone, then it gets more of the 80-20. Hey, here's some things you can do to increase pace and speed and kind of balance everything out. Because I will say over time, you know, I definitely lost my ability when I was only doing that for kind of my extra gears, right? Yep. You know, my VO2 probably didn't necessarily go up. However, you know, I've told people when I was doing math and I was running 70 to 80 miles a week, that's the other thing you mentioned, right? One is I think you're going to lower your risk of injury. And two, you can build volume because you're running easy. And so one of the other things that I remember was the recommendation was to try to get up to 10 hours a week or more, because it's really about time spent in that zone. 10 hours is a lot, right? If you start doing the math. But the point being, if you go out and do 3 miles, three times a week at max heart rate, you're probably not going to see the same type of gain. So it really is about spending the time in that area. And then you see the development. But for me, I mean, the fastest marathon I've ever run, I was doing zero speed work. I was only doing math. And I got a short notice. It was 2020. It was on a Wednesday. Hey, do you want to try to run a Boston qualifying marathon this Sunday? And I was like, well, I haven't been training for a marathon, but I've been running a lot of math. Yeah. And I, you know, I set a marathon PR, almost like you were talking about with the 1 mile, because I didn't have to go into that high gear. I could just run consistently for a lot faster. So it definitely
were you able to get the Boston qualifier?
I got the Boston qualifier, but it was 2020. So the field shrank. So I was like 2.5, almost 3 minutes under, but yeah, I needed like 7 minutes under that year. So
yeah,
I qualified, but I didn't get to Boston.
Yeah. I think it's important to note too, that, you know, I grew up playing baseball and football and basketball, you know, my whole life, and with lifeguarding and firefighting, you know, I was always used to short bursts of speed. And then, you know, the marathon made me realize I was missing that aerobic gear. So that was another reason I really weighed heavily on the math, because it's like, I've spent my whole life doing short sprints. I really need to focus on this one system that I'm really lacking. And like I said, by recording it month to month, it got addicting to see, you know, when you're shaving 15, 20 seconds off of your time each month, it just shows you that the proof is in the pudding. It's working. So I didn't want to change anything up. Right now, I'll be honest, I'm sort of plateauing. You know, it's probably, you know, you get used to running that same speed, and, you know, your physiology and, you know, muscular systems is built for who you are. So I think now, you know, to get over some humps, I probably need to start introducing more speed work, but I'm enjoying it too. So it's all good.
A lot to be said for enjoying it. But, and for anybody listening, I would say, because again, you hear all, hey, do zone two, do easy running, do conversational. The nice thing about math is it gives you a number, like you said, 180 minus yeah. your heart rate. And Jeff has seen when he's done some personal testing, right? People's heart rate may vary. So if you really want to get specific, you can go get tested to see if that's really kind of your max aerobic threshold there. But it gives you the number, 180 minus your age. Spend some time in that if you're looking to do that. And it's just a good way to experiment.
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely recommend getting your heart rate tested if you want to train by heart rate, regardless of SMAF or some other form. I think it is very variable, you know, what your heart rate, your zone would be when you do it in a lab. You know, the science shows you there is a lot of variation amongst people, and your heart rate changes based on the weather as well. But I think people that are listening that maybe don't do math, but they're hearing some of what you're saying, they will probably agree with you if I maybe connect a few dots. It's like, you maybe, if you're training by RPE and stuff, you know, you're used to doing the 4 or 5 or whatever it is. And so that's going to be a lot of your aerobic base, which is what you're talking about doing too. And what a lot of us do when we're running by RPE, or if we're running by lactate threshold pace, or if we're doing by lactate threshold heart rate, all this terminology that runners are listening probably are doing as well, if they're not doing math, understand that there's this variation in intensity that we want to do. And really the 80%, 20% probably plays out for a lot of runners and how they're kind of structuring their run plans and stuff. And it is true. Like, in order to get faster, you do want to have some interval work. You do want to have some things that are higher intensity. And one of the things I think you have going for you in all of this is that, and it's why I kind of narrowed in, because I know a little bit about you, one, the fact that you do other high intensity workouts. And that kind of work that you were doing, accessory work, if you will, outside of running, actually gave you the anaerobic work that somebody who's doing running and is doing interval training or doing some, you know, hill sprints or whatever that is, they're doing that as well from a running standpoint. But that's how they also could be lowering their heart rate for aerobic running as well. And so there's parallels in what you were doing, even if you were not doing math, that makes sense. And so I think there's a lot to be learned from you. And I think that, yeah, you can do a ton of aerobic running. And that if you don't want to become flat, like you're saying, then you've got to introduce some sort of interval work, it doesn't even have to be intervals, some sort of high intensity thing to get your heart rate elevated, you know, every now and then to kind of keep it saying, hey, we've got a higher engine we can get to. And understanding your gears is important because in a race, you're going to experience different gears. And if your heart rate gets high in a race, you're going to want to be able to scale it back and to run at an easy effort. And there are times, I think we talked to, when we talked to Hayden, he even talked about the fact that you're going to push it hard at certain times and you're going to have to be used to running at a higher level than just that aerobic base if you're trying to win it or something.
If you're trying to go out and get the most out of yourself, for sure. So,
sorry for the ramble, but that's kind of what I was thinking when you were going through all that.
I'll just say this. If you're listening and you want to experiment, message us. Go do the 180 minus your heart rate and see how your pace ends up compared to where you think it might be. Do that math test.
It was humbling for me. Humbling.
Me too.
Where are heart rates dropped if you're doing that?
Right. All right. So we talked a lot about math. I'm hoping that everybody listening got something from that. We've talked about it on the show before. It came up in the Born to Run discussion when we talked with them. But I think that's a big part of your story and that arc, right? As we've gone through, I think that it's an important piece. I'm glad we spent some time there. But like we said, so that was getting ready, going into Last Man Standing 2022, correct?
Yep. Yes.
And I mentioned Mother Nature had different plans. So you were signed up for the 50 miler, an ice storm comes in, changes, they push the 50 mile to Sunday and you get a message that says, oh, but by the way, you know, you can either come run Sunday with us, or if you have a conflict like you did, there's this race that starts at, you know, I think of that year was like 2 p.m, right?
One PM
starts at 1 PM and just goes until it's done. And it'll probably go right through the ice storm.
Yeah.
So what made you say yes to that?
Well, first off, I had to watch my kids Sunday. So it was with being signed up for Umstead, there was no other way. You know, if I wanted to do the 100, I had to get 50 miles. So that was the first thing. Secondly, I was like, you know what? Hey, this is like the marathon. Let's send it, you know, let's go for it. And I think I told my wife, we loaded up the truck and drove out there and, you know, set up a camping tent because I didn't have hardly anything ready to go. Pieced together some food, I think I showed you my food. My nutrition plan was zebra cakes, Hungry Man's, and bananas, which was not good, but it got me through, you know.
We were joking about it, and you sent me the picture, but like my response, and even when Jeff and I were talking about it, it was like, well, yeah, I'm sure it could have been improved.
Yes.
But at least you were taking in calories, man. There's probably a lot of people that wouldn't even get the, you know, calories. So it sounded like you were fueling yourself consistently at least.
Yeah. So every third loop was a Coca-Cola and a zebra cake. And that was kind of like the carrot dangling in front of me. So, and I, you know, on that loop after eating that, those were the best loops. I felt so great. But anyways, yeah. So I'll back up just a hair. You came up to me while I was setting up and you shook my hand and you said, hey, I'm Jeremy. What's your name? I didn't get that feel at the marathon. You know, I felt like I was getting looked at like I was vulture meat at the marathon. So this was my first experience with, you know, the ultra running community. And you started it off good, really well for me. So I appreciate that. I don't know if I've ever told you about that, but
I remember
that was a good start.
I remember that conversation and I appreciate the kind words. And I remember hearing, because we were talking, you had done like a 28 or 30 mile training run. If I remember, fasted, is that right? Or close to fasted?
Yeah.
You were doing some interesting training at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It was all of my long runs were fasted. So I'd wake up and have a cup of coffee. So I guess not technically fasted, but yeah. So I think my longest run was a 28 miler. My longest week was like a 65 miler. So I think I hit 60 miles three times. So I felt pretty good. You know, I was sort of ready to go, but at the same time, I had no clue. I'd never been past 28. So, Yeah, that was a it started off at 1 p.m. It was like 70 degrees, you remember? And then at nighttime it got down. It was sleeting and raining and snowing and ice, and it got cold. But yeah, I went further than I had expected to. But I'll tell you guys, to me, you guys were inspiring to watch. I got a lot out of it. Once I got to 50, I was set up for failure because I just knew I needed to get 50. Once I got past 50, I was like, oh, I'll keep going a little bit. And I don't know if you remember, but my ankle was so swollen, looked like a tennis ball was on top of it. Looking back, I just had my shoes too tight. My top shoestring was sawing over top of that tendon there. If I had known what I know now, I could have gotten a couple more loops out of that race, I think. But yeah, that was my first experience with it was 100K, I believe I went 67 miles.
Yeah, man, it was impressive. We talked about, and I don't want to camp out here too long, but like you said, that was the first time we met. I remember shaking your hand. I remember having a conversation. And then I remember watching you fight because you started having those problems early on. I think my wife was there. We gave you some Tylenol and tried to get you going. And then you came back alive a little bit. But I remember thinking, gosh, this is this guy's first ultra experience. He's in a lot of pain. He's out here limping around, but you just kept moving. And not only that, but again, there was an ice storm coming, right? There was a lot of reason to be like, yeah. In fact, I mean, I almost used that as an excuse. My wife told me to get back out there. I was like, 50 miles, we'll clean up before the ice storm. She said, get back out there. And that's what I did. But yeah, man, you earned my respect. And then we've seen that trend, continue. I was like, this is a guy that doesn't mind to work, So you made a very good first impression on me.
I will say, I thought it's interesting that what stood out to him was the fact you came over and shook his hand. I thought that was fascinating. And I think that it's one thing that speaks volumes about the ultra running community is that a lot of folks will talk about the community, talk about the fact it's a close-knit family and everything. And I think we feel that, but I actually like the idea of going up to somebody and introducing yourself. And I don't know if we do that enough. And I think that's a good thing because we all value the idea of community in it. We all love it and we all say it exists. But there are things we can continue to do to kind of reinforce it, if you will, too. So I think that's a good part of it. I don't think I even realized that you two had done that. I actually thought you two were about to hug. But no, I mean, seriously though, it's cool. I mean, I think that is what the ultra running community is about. And I have a feeling that must be one of the things that keeps bringing you back to it.
Yeah, 100%.
So fast forward, right? Because really that was 2022, a couple years ago. You're getting ready to go into 2024. But during that arc, you mentioned you've been to Umpstead twice.
Twice.
Mr. 88%, what is that?
Yeah. Okay. So finish last man standing, go 67 miles. I, keep training. Get to April, get to Umpstead, pack the whole family up. We get a Airbnb in Raleigh. My mother-in-law came, my wife came, the kids came, my brother came. I was confident. And I end up going 88 miles to cut the story real short. But I think I started off a little hot. I pretty much treated it like a long run. I kept my heart rate at 147 and tried to do that the whole time. My nutrition wasn't that great. I was only drinking Pedialytes and I was eating salt pills every aid station, so every 5 miles, which that was my first experience with a lacking nutrition plan. I went downhill really fast in the last loop. So Umpstead's an eight loop course. I was on the seventh loop, mile 85 or so, and I don't know, just the wheels fell off. Felt like I had a fever, had some urination issues. I had this primal desire to crawl up in the leaves. Like I kept looking over. I was wanting to leave my pacer and go crawl in the leaves. And at that point, I'm thinking something's just not right here. And luckily, I was with my brother. And you guys know my brother. He's tough as nails. I mean, we grew up together, so he knows my capability as well. And I'm glad he was with me because, he was sort of able to pull the plug on me potentially getting hurt out there. So, I get back. I've been running for about a year now doing these things, and everybody at the firehouse now, they call me 88% Ed. So I knew that I was going to live with that until I successfully got a 100, which, was a long time coming too. So yeah, 88% Ed was my name for a little bit.
So what do you think was a major takeaway from your 88% experience? And it's 88% because you finished 87 and a half miles, right? So 88% of the run.
Yeah. For a period of time, probably about a month, I felt like a failure. I really did. I felt like I had failed the training plan. I felt like I had failed my family for dragging them up to Raleigh. My brother drove up there to help me out. But what I really got out of that was you really don't fail until you quit. So at that point, I could have just said, you know what? I'm not doing another 100. These things are, maybe it's outside of my capability. You know, that same feeling I had back before I did the marathon. But that's what I really got out of that first failure was that you only fail when you quit. So if I don't give the 100 another shot, then I will have failed. So that's what I got out of that.
Just for everybody listening. So I was there for your first ultra experience at Last Man. And it turns out at that same Mumstead, I was also Mr. 88%.
88% Jeremy. Yeah.
I ended up dropping at the exact same point at the exact same race. And we had seen each other. I think we saw each other on the course when Noelle was out there with you, if I remember right. We chatted for a few minutes and then kind of got separated. And I was bummed, man, when I found out, you know, that you ended up dropping at the same spot that I did. But
so I beat both of you?
Yeah. Jeff finished. Beat us both. Smoked us both.
What? I remember that.
I don't. But now I will.
Forever.
Forever, both you 88%ers.
All right, man. So we also know from the story, you went back to Umstead, gave it another shot. That one didn't work out as well.
That's right.
Another learning experience. However, you did have a couple highs along the way. So you are 100K, second place. I'm sure that had to be a confidence builder, man. You went out and just did an incredible job on that course. But
most importantly,
there was a couple key races that we think really set you up for success.
That's right.
And that was the Final Countdown and the Hydra, which we just so happened.
Do you realize those are the two races he did before his first 100-mile finish? Mm-hmm. So it is because of us.
That's right. We pretty much get half that buckle.
They have no idea what we're talking about. The listeners don't, but you may want to tell them.
Yeah, so this is us plugging our race, right? But
cheap plug.
So luckily, you know, you're local. You and Noel and Ryan have come out and run, you know, different parts of the races. So I think you've done the Final Countdown twice, ran the Hydra. I'm interested, man, because obviously those are really fun for us. We got to see the experience. Like I referenced, you go through the pictures, like who's the Jack guy? Oh, that's Ed. Feed our ego, man. What did you enjoy about those races, or just, you know, from a fun experience standpoint?
Final Countdown for sure. So for anybody that hasn't run the Final Countdown, that is the best long run before a 100-mile race. And it just so happens that that race is 4 weeks before URI every year, or roughly around there. So for me, the last 2 years, it's been my last long run. And on top of that, it, you know, it starts off slow and then gets faster. So it's got a very good training stimulus in there for you. Now, Final Countdown has been special for me too, because my wife and brother have both run them as well. And Noelle was able to, after some training, some marathon training too, she went from running 13 as her longest to running 26 or 27, I think it was, at the Final Countdown. So it was really cool to share her first marathon there at the Final Countdown. My brother, I don't know if he hit a PR at that race, but to see him running that fast in the woods, I mean, I think he got 35 miles this year. Ryan's a beast. I mean, we're both built shorter, but he's like, he towers over me. So, and he's a lot stronger too. He'll do a 5-mile run, and then in between every mile, he'll do like 100 deadlifts at 225. So he's just doing crazy stuff. He's a monster, but yeah, so Final Countdown, last year, Jack and Jim, I think it was, the last two, they went 45 miles. I think they were running their last loop at like a 7-minute pace, something like that.
Jack's last loop, he went out at a 6:15 pace. So he finished a 6:30 pace.
Yeah.
And that was the winning loop. And then he tried to go one more. So the winning loop was a 6:30 pace, 46
miles. That was 2 years ago, though.
Two years ago.
Last year was Caleb.
Right. That was like watching the World Series, watching those two guys grind it out there in the woods, you know, that was really cool. So Final Countdown for me has probably been my favorite race out of anything that I've ever done.
You hear that, right?
Wow, that's big. That's a big statement. And everybody listening, I hope you hear that as well. September, mark your calendars.
I'll add in there too, something probably one of the bigger lessons that I've learned in all the ultras too, is that, so this year I got second place at your race at the final countdown. I think I went two laps further than last year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to get in your head and have the ego, like, you know, you got second place. It's a podium finish. But I also realized that if Jack and Jim, and I think the third place and fourth place would have been there this year, then I really probably would have gotten like fifth or sixth. So what I got out of that is that, you know, it's good to go in these races and have a competitive spirit and try to get podium if that's your thing. But there's always someone that's faster than you. There's always someone, you know, if Jim Walmsley came and did the final countdown, you're not getting first.
I don't know about that.
So what I really gathered out of that is that I've been able to turn the competition to myself and just look at myself and say, you know, if I want to beat what I did last year, I'm not going out there to beat the first or second place person. But if you can do that, then I think, you know, then you'll have that constant improvement.
That's actually one of the reasons we've designed the race like it is so that the runners actually compete against themselves. So there is a competition against the other runners, 100%. I mean, it does take place that way. But a lot of people are competing in this because they're trying to get their longest distance they've ever done. In the first year we ever offered the race, we had a guy who'd run, 5 miles, I think, or 5K. No, 5 miles.
Well, he had never run. So our first year we had a guy that had never run that did 6 miles total. Four or five laps. But I just remember it was 6 miles. Like, yeah. Okay. He showed up because his friend said, you can do a mile in 15 minutes. So just come try it out. And he ended up doing 6 miles. I mean, that's life-changing for somebody, right?
To go,
wow. So all the way up from, not to be a commercial, but that's, yeah, that's right. But that's really why we designed the race, yeah, is so that people can try to get the best out of themselves without some of the pressures that come along with, what if I'm the last one? What if I'm this, right? Because the race is designed that when your race is done, your race is done. And it's really about the clock and not if you're faster or slower than the person next to you until it really comes down to the, you know, the last few that are competing. And then that, like you said, it's a lot of fun, man. It's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, that's a great race.
We appreciate that. Now, we've joked and said that those two races actually set you up for success, right? But we do want to talk about your final climactic moment of accomplishing your first 100 miler at Yawari, which was an impressive feat.
Yeah.
So we've talked about the race a few times on the show before. We've had other guests who've run it as well. But for those who've never heard about it, tell everybody, what is the Yawari 100?
So back to Olmsted, I was searching the easiest hundreds on the East Coast. When I started building a little confidence, I actually searched the hardest 100s on the East Coast. And, you know, having kids, they're small, and both Noel and I work, I had to find something that was closer. So I'm not sure if Yawari is the hardest that's closest to my house, but it's certainly probably one of them. So Yawari is 100 miles. It's 20-mile loops. You have to do 5 loops on just the craziest terrain that you could imagine. I mean, it's not the mountains, but it's never flat. And there is rocks and roots and unstable ground pretty much the entire course. You know, I had originally gone in, run the flats and the downhills, walk or power hike the uphills. But there's several segments in that course where if you did that, you'd run on a flat for about 2 seconds at a time. So as soon as you get flat, you're going to go up. As soon as you go up, you're going to go down. So it's definitely a difficult course on the terrain aspect.
And so a couple of just numbers. You mentioned the 520-mile loops. It's 19,000 feet of gain. So 19,000 feet of gain in incredibly technical terrain.
It's a little bit more like bouldering, too, from what I understand.
I want to know. So obviously, spoiler alert, you finish. 30 hours. Take us to the moment, because we talked about a couple things. So you actually said that first Umstead that we talked about, right, 88%, that was your lowest moment physically. And you described some of the things that you were going through. But with Yawari, which we know you finished, you actually said that there was a moment in there where it was your lowest point mentally that you've had in a race. So take us to that. Tell us where you were, kind of describe the scene, what's going through your head. I want to hear all about it.
Yeah, so I think I'm about 24 hours in now. You know, I started the fifth loop. It's just breaking daylight, so I'm in like 24, 25 hours in. And we had originally planned that my wife was going to pace the third loop. My brother was going to do the fourth loop, and then Noel or Ryan would do the fifth loop alongside me. And then, so the third loop, Noel did with me, and she started it off, you know, sort of stubbing her toes on some of the rocks and, you know, laughing it off. And then towards the end of the loop, about 15 miles, she sort of looked at me and was like, I don't know if I'm going to make it out of this loop here, you know, 20 mile loop. She started banging her toes pretty hard on a few rocks. And there was one period where I saw a tear coming down her face. So I knew she was starting to get kind of mangled up by the course, but she's tough. She's tough as nails. And, you know, for her to be out there with me sharing that was super cool. So we ended that loop and she said, I'm going to let Ryan do the last two loops. So I run a loop with Ryan. Ryan really talked me up during that fourth loop. We were running pretty good through the night, shared a lot of good miles with Wes Clater and Caleb. That was really fun. You know, it kept the spirits high. But Ryan got sick. So he had some stomach problems. And so Noel was sleeping in the car. I start off on the fifth loop all by myself. And at this point, my IT band started flaring up pretty good again. I started thinking about, man, I dragged my family up here again. I'm out in the middle of the woods. Noelle's in the parking lot. I was doing the math on the time, you know. It's like, okay, I'll probably be back 11, 12. So, you know, Noelle's just going to hang out by herself in the car. The kids are at home. And then the doubt started creeping in. You know, it really did. Like, can I finish this thing? You know, why can't I piece together this 100-mile distance? Like, what is it about it? I end up sitting on a stump, almost questioning turning around and just going back to the start line. And then my wife called me and she's like, what are you doing? And I was like, well, I'm sitting on a log right now, to be honest with you. I'm at like mile 84 or something like that. She's like, why didn't you tell me you were running this last loop by yourself? And I was like, well, I didn't want to wake you. And she's like, well, I'll come do it with you. And I was like, ah, you know, because I saw how the third loop sort of chewed her up a little bit. Anyways, Guy, a fellow ultra runner locally here, solid guy. He's awesome. He was crewing for, I think, Caleb or Wes. He had set up a transport to drive Noel to the halfway aid station loop. So Noel's like, hey, Guy's going to drive me. I'll finish out the last 10 miles. So at that point in my mind, I was like, okay, I can go another six to get to the aid station. And then once I'm with Noel, we could be out here all day, you know, those mental things that I was sort of worried about. And your mind will do that. It'll peel the onion back to figure out where your weak points are, you know? And at that point, I sort of realized I could still run. Physically, I was fine. I was in pain, but I could still run. So I got to Noel, and we actually ended up finishing the race together, crossed the finish line together. And that was a super cool way to get the first buckle.
That's so awesome. And I remember you texting and talking about how special that time with Noelle was, and for her to show up and do that last part of the loop. What a great way to finish. What did it feel like to finally come across? Like, what do you remember specifically about how you felt?
That's a good question. Obviously, at first, it's like, okay, I finally did it. You know, finally pieced it together. Honestly, Noel threw me in the back of the car and I drove me home like a dead deer after that. And I slept the whole way, but it was very rewarding for the next couple of days. You know, the guys at the firehouse were following me the whole time. They were sending me texts, cheering me on. You know, the same guys calling me 88% Ed were saying, you can do it, man. And next year you're going back to win the thing. And so it was, I had a lot of good support from pretty much everybody, you know? So to answer the question, I guess, it was kind of culmination of all of the failures that I had finally come together. And I was glad that I never gave it up throughout, you know, injuries and the failures and the DNFs and, you know, all the setbacks and the sicknesses. And, you know, then it's still the next day you're like, what's next? You know, what can you do next? You know, so.
Yeah. It seems to me like if you look back at your entire, like, history that we've kind of started with, the fact that you read Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins, right? That got you to do a marathon, and you started to kind of put together doing a full Ironman, then you went over to doing the Southern Tour because you ended up trying to do a 50 miler to get into Umstead. And it's like you keep raising the bar for yourself constantly. Is that what this is about for you? Like, what's the next thing that you can challenge yourself? Like, or do you just love ultra running now? Like, what are you up to? Like, what are you doing?
So I actually tried to think about this yesterday on my run. One of the big things for me is running kind of complements my life in a way that me personally, now this is just me, I cannot go for a long run or and enjoy a run unless the pieces of my actual life are together. So because I have a love for running, you know, it's a way for me to stay consistent with making sure that the pieces of my life on the other side, so my career, my family, you know, my being a husband to Noelle, being a father to my kids, I have to have those ducks in a row to really be able to enjoy a run. There's that aspect of it for sure. And then they both complement each other. So I hope that, we have a race next week, the last man standing. Jeremy was an inspiration to me. I think you went like 94 miles that year, 90 miles.
94, it's like 87,
88.
You got first though, right?
88%. Yeah. So that year, I was lucky enough to outlast our man, Wes Clater. So yes.
I hope that I challenge myself to the point next week to reach one of my new limits, but also inspire someone just like Jeremy did to me. Jeremy was a big inspiration for me, you know, through Maffetone training, through, you know, training for my first 100, because I saw him do it and the way that he supported me. So, you know, next week I'm running with my brother, Ryan. Actually, four of the guys that called me 88% Ed are running the last man standing next week too. So, you know, I think they're wanting to test their own grit and will. So I hope that I am an inspiration to someone next week, like you were to me, and I don't care to win it. I do hope to find a new personal limit, whatever that might be, whether it's a distance or a feeling or overcoming some obstacle that I don't think I could. But that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Dude, I can't wait. So I'm going to be out there volunteering. This will be the first time I haven't run last man at Southern Tour since they put it on. But I will be out there. And now, especially knowing that your buddies are there and stuff, and I'm really looking forward to the experience of witnessing what you guys all do. And no doubt it's going to be inspiring. So I'm super excited. How are you feeling going into this? Because one of the things that we haven't mentioned, so we've kind of told your story, but dude, we mentioned work ethic. And if you go look at your training, like you are if I have to get up at 1:30 in the morning to go run 30 miles, like you're doing that. And so we're seeing the consistency. I think you've been, you know, injury free coming off of Uari. So how are you feeling going into this event?
I actually feel really strong. So I came off Uari. I took a week off and then I slowly built back up. Like you said, I haven't had any issues until like 3 days ago. I got like this cold going on here. So like I said, that sort of tends to happen during these weird tapers. I don't like to taper, man. I don't know what to do, you know?
Yeah, I can tell you, you let your body recover and you trust all the running you've already done has made you prepared for your race.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, I feel strong. I'm excited. It does feel good going into this injury free. Last year I was injured, so I couldn't do it. That was a super bummer, but I'm excited. I'm ready to run with my brother too. We're going to 10 up together. He's a beast, man. I'm excited to see what he puts out because I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. He's going to do well.
Is he going to beat you?
I hope he does. I hope he does.
You better make it really hard on him if he does.
Yeah.
How about that?
So one of the things that stood out to me when you kind of sent us your information is you do a lot. We talked about your Maffetone training. We talked about your arc here as well. But one thing that you kind of outlined in, you know, the email that we sent to all of our guests to get information about them, right, is you said that it's very important for you to stack the odds in your favor and that you structure a lot of your life around making sure that you're successful. And you even just talked about just a second ago the idea that you can't enjoy a run if you know your family life is not like where you want it to be, or your work life's not where you want it to be, and you hold those types of things as part of stacking your odds in your favor. And so you gave us like 10 different things, and we're not going to walk through all of them or anything like that, but I'm just curious, are there like one or two of those that stand out to you of like a word of advice for those who are listening, like these are the things that they could do to stack the odds in their favor of being successful as an ultra runner?
For me, if your goal is important enough to you, you can set your life up in a way that allows you to, you know, continue on with your normal life and still achieve your goal. So my wife works, she has to be at work at 7 o'clock, which means I have to be back at the house at 6:30. So if I'm running a 30-mile run and I know it's going to take me 5 hours, I know that I have to be on the road at 1:30. My wheels have to be moving by 1:30. If it's at 1:40, that means that 30 miler is now a 29 miler. So just because you have a normal life doesn't mean that you can't achieve these long distance running goals too. So for me, it meant backing up my sleep just, you know, an hour or so. So most nights, Noelle and I were in bed. We try to be in bed by 9 with the kids. But we have a 4-year-old and a 3-year-old too, so we're up all night. I mean, <Right. laughs> at least one of them's getting up, you know, throughout the night too. But like I said, because I know I need to get a 30-mile run in, I set the alarm clock and I get out there and I do it. And that's the discipline side of things.
I'm gonna jump in real quick. So one of the things that really stood out to me when you put those kind of bullets together, and because I felt this, and you even mentioned it, your Uwari experience. So you just talked about big picture. Hey, you can organize your life in a way where you can still achieve your goals, right? But one of the things you said is, hey, going into a race, what are the things that could make you want to quit? And then how do you organize those things in a way? Because I've been there. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's raining. I don't want my wife to be in the rain. Maybe this is a reason to quit, right? And you were saying at Uwari, like, oh, she's going to be sleeping in the car, or, oh, you know, my kids might be doing this. Here's a reason. So that really stood out to me, is that as you're going into a race, how do I organize the things, that external factors, so that they don't become an excuse when I'm ready to quit? Can you talk on that real quick?
Yeah. So I think first you have to try to formulate in your head what those could be, because if you haven't done a race or you haven't done a longer distance race, you probably don't know. And, you know, your mind's going to do funny things to you. It's going to make sure you know. You know, mile 80, 85, you know, you might have thought that you figured out all the incidental things that are going to pop up in your head, but they're not. You're going to get surprised, because your mind is going to tell your body to quit several times using several different methods. You know, you'll start looking at your foot, you'll see your ankle swollen, then you'll think about your kids back at home. Then you'll see, I feel like my back is out, you know. I got something important to do at work, you know. Am I going to be able to roll around with my kids next week? Am I going to be able to roll around with them this year? You know, am I causing permanent damage? So you're not going to know until you put yourself in that position. And for me, it took me 3 100-mile tries to sort of peel back all those layers of the onion. And I'm sure that if I run another 100, my mind will find more for me too. So.
Yeah. And when he says if, he means when.
When. Yeah. Right. Oh, well, I mean, just to be clear. Next week, he'll run 100 miles.
Minimum.
Just, yeah.
He said he wants to do a personal best.
Just remember, 88% of a 200-mile last man is way more than 88 miles. So that's all you got to remember. All right, dude. Well, this has been a lot of fun. For everybody listening, I think there's a ton of value. Like I was saying before, one, the personal connection makes it a lot of fun. But we have the benefit of seeing behind the scenes some of the things that we probably didn't talk about. And so I would tell everybody, go follow Ed. You're on Instagram, EdKennedy1100. So EdKennedy1100. And where I would also say, man, is find you on Strava, because that's where it's inspiring to kind of watch the work that you're doing. But between the math discussion, which I think is huge value, if you're listening, hopefully you, like I said, go experiment, send us those messages. I want to see when you do the math test, if there's any surprises there. But just to your work ethic, your experiences, man, we just appreciate you so much. And we're going to keep you on to do a fun game of Patreon. But so for everybody else, we just appreciate your time. We thank you for listening and plugging in. Like we always ask, if you're finding the value, please share, tell everybody you know, and don't forget that final countdown in September. We talked a lot about it. It's going to be a lot of fun. But Ed, man.
Also, 420.
420 is the Hydra. Don't forget about that one.
Oh, either. I thought it was something else when you said 420. Yeah, the race. The race, the Hydra. Keep going.
I hear bubbles in the background?
I don't hear bubbles. Anyways, I hear smoke.
Ed, thanks so much for your time, man. We really enjoyed it.
And thank you guys for having me.
All right. We're looking forward to this game, but for everybody else... Cut. Oh my gosh, I feel like I need a burp. I need to get that out before I start.
We are a pair.
Of course, I started tapering last week, so now I'm sick. What the heck, man? I've only been sick like 3 times since I've started running. Almost every time it's due to the taper.
I feel like we're going to catch something from him.
I don't think that's how that works. You're the germ guy. You should know that.
That's why I'm asking.
Oh, you had Laz on here?
Yeah, that's why I want to talk to you about last man standing type things.
He was like, do you know Ed Kennedy?
I heard he's I'm sure.
He's like, what?
So where are you guys at right now? You're at one of your houses or?
No, in the studio.
So, yeah, the big studio.
Downtown Charlotte, right?
That's right. Yeah. We flew in. The helicopter dropped us off. We just started the studio up.
Are you like in charge?
He's the fire chief.
Yeah.
He's the actual chief?
I don't think I'm the fire chief down in Curry Beach.
Well, dang, dude. Do you know Andy Glaze?
I do. I don't know him personally.
Are you more of a thinker or doer?
He's got to think about it. He's got to think about it.
The answer just told us. I mean, I don't know if you know this, but this is the Ultra Running Guys. Okay, so I don't know that a whole lot's going to take precedent over that.
Our five listeners demand this time, of course.
That's right. One word people use to describe you. 88% is like three words.
All right, listen, thank you so much. We recognize the fact that you are probably just hanging on just for a couple more minutes as you're finishing up your run. But really, we do want to give you a huge thank you for the constant support that you've shown us. We hear you and we feel you. And the best way for us to continue to grow is for you to share us with your friends. Tell them what you put in your ears when you're out there on a long run. Hit the like button, leave us a comment, leave a review, and give us some direct feedback on what you like about the show and also what you don't like. We're here to improve and do it for you.
And it really means the world. And listen, if you would like to support financially, you can connect with us on Patreon at patreon.com/theultrarunningguys, or you can use the support link in the show notes. Any and all support goes directly back into growing the show and helping us get better at what we love to do, which is to serve all of you. And with that, finish up that run, get cleaned up, and just show up.
Clean.
Clean.